Yes, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I am your host, Jeff Bryant, and this is Now We're Talking. Berlin-based soprano Rachel Fenlon is an artist on the rise. She has a diverse and uniquely varied solo career as an oratorio soloist, a passionate and avid recitalist, a skilled pianist, and an accomplished composer. Her website lists far too many credits and accolades for me to itemize here, so suffice it to say she sings a lot, and she has done it across Europe and here at home in Canada. She's back in Vancouver for a brief stint to perform in the Vancouver Opera Festival, which is running until May 13th, and she's here in the studio with me now. Welcome, Rachel.
Hey, Jeff.
We're hanging out.
We're hanging out.
We're doing it. We were talking before the show, and you're a podcast enthusiast. You listen to a lot of podcasts.
Oh, I'm a podcast junkie.
So how cool is it that we're doing this together?
This is like a dream come true.
And you were saying you've done lots and lots of interviews, but
yeah.
Oftentimes when you're a performer, they're always the short, brief interviews that are designed just to get the information out, but you don't necessarily get to flesh it out into a conversation.
Exactly.
Like you have in life, and that's what we're doing here. It feels good.
I like it.
We have so much that we can talk about. And I know that I always say this when I do these interviews because I'm always talking to good friends and good people. I know the time is going to fly by. So we could do it in a linear way. But you know what? Before we talk about anything else, let me just dive right into the thing that I told you is really thrilling me, which is this Fenlon and Fenlon business. Now, when I first read that on your website, I thought, has she put together some sort of vaudeville act with her sister? Are they taking it on the road? Does her sister juggle or something? What is it going to be? And I thought, oh, okay, it's kind of disappointing because I've met your sister and she's a fun person. I could see her being up for that. But no, I realize what it is I'm assuming this is unique, and I want to hear how unique this is because I don't know, but you've combined your career as an operatic singer with your skill as a piano player. And for me, when I first met you quite a few years ago, I knew you as a piano player. Then
right.
I found out you were doing your undergrad in opera performance here at UBC and ultimately your master's, and off you go, you're in Europe. So what's behind this combining playing and singing? And is it considered unusual in your industry?
Right. Okay. So yeah, it's actually not done by anyone else currently.
On Earth?
That I know of in the classical
Whoa,
music world.
So it truly is. It truly is exceptional.
It's a little weird.
Oh
like
my God.
I have to say, my contemporaries and also like my mentors and people are like, it's certainly at first they thought, okay, it's very ambitious because the two are, I mean, there are people that make careers out of being song pianists or
right.
accompanying.
Some
singers.
Might say audacious, even.
Some might say audacious.
Yes.
So, yeah, certainly it's quite unique in that sense, and then. What was the other question?
Well, I'm living in this concept of what it looks like for you to do both. So I'm hearing that it's audacious. I'm hearing it's unusual. And I mean, in the past, when we've spent time together as friends, you have made efforts through your passion to introduce me to the world in which you reside.
Right.
And
yeah.
for me, I'm more of a contemporary music guy,
right.
not so much a classical,
yep.
sophisticated
yep.
music guy. And it's not my world, so I don't know a lot about it.
Right.
But I can hear what you're saying. And I imagine that, like you say, people devote their lives to being a singer or devote their lives to being a player. And unlike
yep.
with contemporary music, where it's kind of a given oftentimes that somebody plays guitar and sings or plays piano
exactly.
and sings,
yep.
it is not the case. In your
no,
world.
It's not. It's not. Because both are, they demand a lot technically.
Right.
So that's really the big challenge that
sure.
I had to sort of take on.
Yes.
Because it's not just a series of harmonic progressions and you're just sort of accompanying
along.
In chords and singing along. No,
yes.
it's, well, classical music is such a rigid form. It is a real form of an art, right? So it's, I mean, of course, everything is, but
yeah.
classical music, we always say, it's about finding freedom in the prison. It because
oh,
it really
okay,
is
like
that.
That,
you know? It's
the prison being how ornate and technical and precise.
Precision, exactly.
And also the expression of that precision.
Exactly.
I'm thinking.
I mean, I always compare it to ballet dancing because you think you go to the ballet and you in those big scenes where everyone is doing this wonderful choreographed piece, you don't want to see that one ballet dancer out
yeah,
of line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's just a great visual, but also, I mean, it's the same in music.
Right. That precision is everything.
It's everything.
I hear what you're saying because when I think about, you know, for example, yesterday I was playing some piano and I wrote a song and I just,
great.
I sat at the piano and I was just sort of surrendering to the process.
Yeah.
And I play back, I recorded it and I play it back and I like it. But I was thinking about our interview today and I think some of the things we're talking about. And ultimately for me, I'm just kind of doing like a wash on three chords, like you say.
Which is great.
Which is great for what I'm doing.
Yep.
But there's not the expectation of what, as you say, it needs to be where that one ballet dancer is out of sync.
Yep.
Because in my world, I could kind of justify it as some sort of, it fits in with the culture of the music that
Absolutely.
I'm creating. That the there's, ambiguity.
There's more, ambiguity is a great word. There's more ambiguity and there's more freedom.
I think I just got the cover art for my next album, which will be an ambiguous ballerina, slightly out of sync.
I love it.
Just kind of floating out of the frame. And it'll all come back to this moment in this conversation.
Good.
Perfect. So, well, tell me what inspired you to be so audacious as to combine these things. Is it because you, were you feeling like you're missing playing the piano?
You know, that's actually really insightful. To a certain extent, yes. But what really, what it really came down to is actually I had this longing to do this since I was a teenager.
Really?
Yeah. So since, and it, particularly with the music of Schubert, Franz Schubert, who was an 18th century composer who wrote specifically for piano and voice.
Oh.
I call him the original singer-songwriter because he basically, he formed what we now know as the song genre in the 18th century. And so I first heard these songs when I was studying as a young singer. And I remember the first time that I took on one of these pieces and they're in German and this great poetry. And I was told by my singing teacher, okay, and now the pianist will come in and accompany you.
Right.
And I thought, and I'm 17, and I'm like, the pianist will come in. Why can't I just accompany myself? But like, and she was like, that's completely unheard of. And no, like, stop talking nonsense.
You're
like,
thinking outside the box.
Like,
get back in the box.
Get back in the box. And, you know, you need to get into university, whatever. So then I kind of put that on the back burner. But anyone that was really close to me in school, especially in undergrad, they knew that I was always like, get the pianist out of here. I have so much respect for pianists.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to say it, but I had this desire.
Had the longing
That's what
to
I'm
express,
trying to say.
Express that. Yeah.
Exactly. And so so I guess it came to a point about a year and a half ago where I, honestly, it just popped into my head again. And I actually, it's kind of a funny story, but I got in an argument with my pianist who I was doing a recital tour with. He was being a real diva.
This is rock and roll.
He was being such a diva.
Okay.
I love him. We're still great friends. But anyway.
Did he, and he know, I assume that he knew that you're a piano player.
Yeah, he heard me. Oh, by the way, I practice piano pretty much every day of my life.
Was the argument, Rachel, I'm sick of you hanging over my head that you play piano. I get it. Let me do my thing.
Oh, yeah. We were just arguing about tempo. Like he was saying, no, it's got to be this. And I said, no, it's got to be this. Get out of here. And then anyway, you know, like sort of half jokingly, I said, I'm just going to accompany myself. And then he said, okay. And
almost like daring you?
Yeah. And I did. We were doing this pretty important recital tour. And I did. And the audience, everything changed in that moment. For me, it was the time I felt at home the most in my entire life doing what I'm doing.
Oh my God.
And the audience, they were just, because suddenly this genre, which feels like the art, I'm talking about the art song genre in general, it's always felt, or it can feel a little bit distant to people because it's the merging of two really intense things, poetry, classical poetry and classical music, right? It's sometimes hard to digest. And I don't know, I feel like there was this sense of spontaneity for me just sitting at the piano and being like, all right, I'm going to do this myself.
Tell me more about that moment, because when you, I sense that you're not, it's not a hyperbole when you're telling me that it was the most present, you said, you felt in your life.
Yeah,
was that
certainly.
The word? I mean, that's a bold statement.
Right.
And I'm sensing it's the truth. We've got to explore that.
Okay.
Tell me more, walk me out onto that stage.
Okay.
And tell me how you were feeling and how you arrived at that moment of presence, because isn't that what we're all seeking in life? You know, however we arrive at it, through romantic love or through like nature or through artistry, the feeling of presence, is there any easier way to recognize happiness or contentedness than those moments of presence where you're unassailed by concerns and anxiety and just living your life right now? So describe to me how you got to that place. It's amazing.
I guess if you want to play by play, then I was terrified.
Wow.
I was so afraid that people would think my piano playing was terrible. Like, I had a lot of fear around that, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm a professional opera singer. I've been a professional opera singer since I was 24.
The standards are very high.
So the standards are really high. Yeah. And it's like, if I'm not as good a pianist or... Mm. And I don't play... P.S. I hadn't played piano in public since I was 18. Like,
what? And hold on a second. I want to be clear about this, too, okay. Before you stepped out on the stage.
Okay,
are
okay.
you... How much lead time was there between this decision that you were going to go on the stage the day before, and did you rehearse in the interim?
That night.
Like a madman.
Until 3 a.m., yeah.
And like sweating profusely and like crying.
Calling
and like
my mom.
Calling your mom, going to the fetal position.
I slept under the grand piano.
You literally did?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Oh, I'm not exaggerating any part of this.
Oh, my Lord. And second guessing yourself the whole time?
Oh, gosh, completely. And thinking, well, and then I thought, okay. It ended up coming down to this. First of all, in moments like this, there's always a defining moment for me. And I don't know if that comes down to something that some people define as integrity or some sort of inner voice, but it felt right.
Hmm.
I do remember that. And so that's what guided me. So like, you know, I went, before I got out on stage, I was very nervous.
It and didn't then, necessarily make the nerves go away or
no,
the doubts, but it
felt,
did feel...
And then, you know what it was, Jeff? It was like the moment I sat down and started doing it in front of people, I really was more myself than taking on any opera role.
Wow.
Then, and I felt
so big.
That I was just, okay, this is me. So take it or leave it. And that was freeing.
Freeing. Mm. And freeing in a way where you were consciously aware of those boundaries and seeking to remove them. Or not necessarily aware of them. Like the boundaries sometimes become evident when they're being removed. Which was it for you?
What do you mean by boundaries?
Well, I guess just whatever the sense of freedom was that you gained,
oh, okay.
it implies the removal of obstacles.
Right.
And so I guess my question is, were you perceiving those boundaries and seeking, oh, I hope that there's some things that are going to happen where I can remove this and feel more like myself? Or was it just kind of an epiphanous thing?
This,
like, look
the
at
latter,
this. Oh
the
my
latter.
God.
I had no idea that
just
I had
fell
artistic
away.
Boundaries.
Oh my God.
Because I've always been quite balls to the wall in general.
Sure.
Like, you know, moved to Berlin, you know, I mean, was always comfortable singing these really big roles
in opera
and just going for it. But so I actually didn't think I had that many boundaries.
That's even more interesting
which was
to me.
Really, it cracked open so much in me.
Wow.
Suddenly I realized, like, oh, there's so much more that I want to express that I never had an idea of.
So you're having these insights while you're performing?
No, not necessarily. While
maybe,
I'm performing, I'm just kind of in Schubert land.
Right, okay.
He's like my one true love.
Because I was going to say before, like, it sounds like playing this on the piano and singing is already the ultimate, like, rubbing of the belly while the rubbing
yeah,
of the top of the head already.
Yeah, yeah.
So also, like, having epiphanies and contemplating them is probably just one thing too many. But it
yeah.
was afterwards
it was
that
afterwards.
You started to analyze it or think it through consciously.
Exactly. And I think it was also just the... I have to say, whenever you try anything out, certainly something like that, I needed to know that it worked from people that I trusted.
Right.
And it was those affirmations that then brought on the epiphanies.
Those that were there and witnessed it,
yeah,
that you trust.
Yeah, and then because right after I continued to do concerts like that, and then I ended up, you know, starting a tour in Toronto and then across Europe and whatever.
Yeah.
So, and along the way, having lots of mentors. I mean, a lot of mentors. And through the affirmation of those people, I realized that led me more to an epiphany than an actual experience.
This
to be
is
honest.
So rock and roll. I can believe, but I feel like I want to say can't believe. I'm so heartened by my instinct to do this show and to have these interviews. I was mentioning to you before, I've had a latent desire for about 4 or 5 years. I really think I want to explore the interview. I have such interesting conversations sometimes with people, sometimes with artists. And when you describe that feeling that was guiding you, I've had that feeling also.
Okay.
And for 4 or 5 years, I wasn't sure what to do about it. There was probably fear. I think there was also the legitimate thought, I don't know if I want to do a podcast. I want to have the radio experience. There was details as well.
Logistics, yeah.
Yeah, but ultimately it is fear. Like procrastination is fear. And I've skated around trying to get there. I've been doing this show for almost a year. I did my first true proof of concept with David Ward about 3 weeks ago. and we had a great conversation. He came in here. It was beautiful. It was really a lot like what you're describing. It was just like, this is showing me that it's the real thing. And that same day, social media success story. I had a huge vacation from social media, but I've been using Instagram. You pop up on the day that I do that, saying, do you want to interview an opera singer? And I'm starting to see how this is coming together. You know, my desire to have a conversation with you today is rooted in our friendship, rooted in my admiration for your process. My thought about what our conversation would be today, just kind of trusting that, you know, I'll be aware of what's going on in your career. We'll, of course, talk about things happening in your career. But we started this conversation today by me zeroing on something that mattered to me. And right. I didn't want to project too much. But now I'm hearing how revolutionary it is,
right,
what you're doing. And I say it's rock and roll because it feels like, I don't know, it feels like you're really seeking to express who you are. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how to say this in a way that doesn't sound too clichéic or obvious. But it, to me, like, the reason I say it's rock and roll, I love rock and roll. I love the Beatles because, like, if you take the Beatles, for example, they figure out how to play, they get out there, and they do it. And it's like you're having this experience of getting to really connect with your intention as an artist, it feels
right,
like.
And find some autonomy, too.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That was a key thing for me is that...
Yes.
Is finding that as an artist is crucial, because otherwise you're always going to be looking for approval. And
yes.
If you're looking for approval, you can't necessarily do what an artist needs to do, which is not that.
Yeah.
It's our job to see how this art form bends and shapes and transforms and, you know, transcends all those words, because I feel like that's my biggest job. It's not to sing a really beautiful line in an opera, although that is a really, I mean, also, we could talk about opera more.
Exactly,
at some point,
exactly. We could just spend the whole hour talking about that, and that would be enough.
It,
you know,
exactly.
And it's like you've been,
exactly.
I feel like you've been so, I don't know, proactive about going on this journey from the outside looking in and along the way checking in with you, that would be enough.
Yep.
That could be your life story.
Well, and it is for some
people.
And it
people. Is. And it is.
And that's very important.
Yes. And by no means am I saying that this is a better thing or a greater thing.
Exactly.
I'm just saying that your own journey is moving around and zigzagging.
Right.
And I always admire and am satisfied by the story of those. And I guess we all do it in our own way, but taking these different elements of who we are and fusing them together to be an expression of who you are, you know, and it just feels like artistically you have these versions of that. And I don't know, I was reading also how, you know, you're composing music, poetry matters to you, and you do that as well.
Yeah, I read a lot of poetry.
What is underneath all of this? Like whether it's the poetry, the composing, the piano, the opera singing, or...
Right.
Elements of who you are,
right.
By the way, that don't have to be related to the arts, because there's more to you than all this too, of course.
Yeah.
What is underneath all this? Like, what is your life for, Rachel?
Oh, my gosh,
where is this all going?
Jeff,
because
said you asked easy questions.
Are you turning 30 soon?
I'm turning 30 in 10 days.
I thought that your birthday was in May, and I couldn't remember that for sure. But
Taurus.
I thought she's born in 87. Awesome. I think she's... I knew that this was coming up. And I'm thinking to myself, checking with you now, she is like on a really great path. Like we shouldn't feel this way. But I think that when we turn 30, there's kind of this checking in. Where am I at? Where am I going? Thing that happens for people.
Yeah, sure.
And I like where you're at and where you're going.
Well, thank you, sir.
Assuming you live a long life. And I think you might live to be 100, Rachel, because people are living longer and longer.
They are living longer and longer.
70 years from now, there's going to be a lot of advances in science. I'm telling you.
So, dude, I think in 10 years.
So I think you're going to live to be 100 at least.
Okay.
So let's just say it's 100 because it's a nice even number. So you got 70 years left.
Yep.
You're 30% through your life. And my God, you're doing good work.
Thank you.
What do you think, what would you like to see happen? Where is this going in terms of investing in this, I don't know, this awareness of your artistic self?
I mean, that's the question. I don't know if I can answer it.
Of course you can. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous question.
It is a ridiculous
question. We can just like guess at it or something.
Basically, you asked me where all of this comes from, and I think about that a lot because often you, like I said, once you start to open this, it's not a Pandora's box. It's sort of the opposite, because Pandora's box is not a good thing. But it's that it all stems from curiosity. Mm. It all stems for me from trying to understand what it is to be human and what it is to have desire that's something different than what we're told desire is. And for me, it's like a longing to understand and a longing to live, you know, I mean, it sounds a little bit cheesy, but it's no. really, that's basically where it all comes from. And then sort of, yeah, it's interesting. It kind of correlates to what you just told me about the social media story about how we discovered each other or got back in touch. But yeah. It's that, you know, well, I think once you start to open these floodgates, all these little like gifts come, you know, along the way and they start small. You know, for example, when I started the project, this Fenlon and Fenlon, it was just small things like that person that I'd always admired suddenly wrote me and said, you know, can you do a concert? Or I actually got to perform in Vienna last month and Scotland and, you know, like these places that meant a lot to me, whatever.
Those doors opened.
But it's other things too. And I think that's why I love poetry and why I love composing, because these are things that are gifts that open up from inside of you. I mean, we're such weird creatures, human
yes.
beings. And like the fact that I can go for a walk and then suddenly be like, oh my gosh, I have to sit down right now and I have to write this poem. And I know that sounds
that
really
force,
weird.
But there's a force within you.
Oh my gosh, and that's not really... And oh, by the way, I'm not religious. So it's really not... It's just fascinating. So I just
Where
feel
does
like,
it come from?
Well, and I have no idea.
No,
so
but I'm saying that's
the
fascination
the
is what is this? I need to indulge this curiosity.
Exactly. And that's
I might
the
not
curiosity.
Even know... what it's going to result in. It's not as if there's any finish line. I'm going to live and die,
well, and, that's
and
the
this
thing.
The world will keep yep. spinning until it stops spinning. I don't know why any of this is happening,
so
but I'm going to pull on this thread.
Yep. Stay curious and stay always open to these things. And honestly, it just becomes more abundant. And really, it sounds kind of new agey and weird. And I'm... Yeah, but
I don't feel that way. I can see how it could run the risk of that. But in our hands, we're going to protect it from sounding too new agey and keep it accessible, because we don't
Excellent.
Want it to be stigmatized, because these are profound truths that we're skirting around, Rachel. We're going to figure this out,
okay.
of all places, on college radio.
Hey.
Are you listening, folks? It's CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. This is Now We're Talking, and I'm in studio with my in-studio guest, Rachel Fenlon. And, you know, we don't want to sound arrogant. We don't want to sound pretentious. But we're trying to figure everything out within the next 36 minutes. It's only an hour-long program. And, you know, maybe I could push to have a time slot at CITR that's maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours. But I would like to think that we can get to the bottom of some things in 60 minutes or less. It's interesting talking about pulling on that thread artistically, because yesterday I had that experience
okay.
where I've been reconnecting with piano a bit. My experience of piano is very rudimentary, but it's all I need in order just to have an outlet for expressing something,
okay.
expressing a song. And when I went to UVic in Victoria, it was a beautiful thing, because in the music department there, they have all these small closet rooms with just enough room for a piano. You go in, you close the door, and you just get lost. It was so cool. It was what I needed to develop a relationship with the piano. That's the challenge with piano versus guitar or other instruments, is you need to have one, and ideally you want some privacy. So I was lucky enough to have that at UVic. Here at UBC, as you'll know, because you got 2 degrees from the UBC music department.
Yes.
It's more of a challenge. It's not the same here, because yeah. there's more security considerations. I don't know who's drifting onto campus and getting their gummy fingers all over the pianos, but understandably, they have security precautions. So I've tried to sneak into the music building a few times. I've seen a lot of signs telling the students to make sure they close doors. Thankfully, some students haven't heeded those signs, and I've managed to sneak in and play some piano. Yesterday, I went to sneak in, and I couldn't penetrate the barriers of security. And I was thinking to myself, I just want to tell somebody, listen, I got a song in me. I don't know what the song is. I don't know what the chords are or the melody or what it's about, but I know I have a song in me. You need to let me do this. But I knew that that probably wouldn't be compelling, and probably I didn't know who to express that. Maybe it could have been if I said it with a passion. That was how I felt when I was walking through the building and all the doors to the pianos were closed, and then I ended up getting locked out of the building and I was confused. That was the thought running through my head. These people need to know. It sounds grandiose, but that was the feeling.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, in the back of my mind, I thought that it was silly. And I'm like, oh, you've got a song. Don't be silly. But I found a piano elsewhere on campus. And sure enough, I had this experience of just sitting down and letting it flow in a way that I've, I don't know, rarely experienced. And I've been really enjoying when I write something on the piano, I'll just use my phone to record it. And that makes me accountable to quickly write a melody, quickly write lyrics, pull it all together. And when I walked away from that piano an hour and a half later, I had a song. And so I felt like I did have a song inside of me. That felt really good. So when you were talking before about that curiosity, I totally relate to that, and I just had that experience yesterday. We're almost up to halfway through the show. I told you this was going to fly by.
You did.
And being conscious of the fact that we're almost at the halfway point, how could we talk as much as we have about what you've been doing with this piano slash singing revolutionary act without playing one of the songs?
Oh.
So you gave me two options, and in an effort to avoid pronouncing either of them... I'm going to ask you which one you'd like to play first.
Let's do Im Frühling.
Good. I assume that's how you pronounced it, but here it is, folks. Rachel is, whether she knows it or not, I think she does, whether you'd be mortified at me saying this or not, she's changing the world through a revolutionary act.
That's mortifying.
And it's not what she would say, but that's the judgment that I've made here, and she's done it right here. Check it out. Thank you. Yes, that's Rachel Fenlon playing the piano and singing. It's a revolutionary act. I'm going to keep saying that, even though it's mortifying her. But I'm just totally intrigued by the fact that it is very unusual, and she's doing it, and she's following her heart, and she's following her artistic impulse, and I think it's a beautiful thing. We were listening to that here in the studio. And immediately, oftentimes when I play tracks, we'll either, me and the guests, will actively listen to it, or it'll just be kind of playing quite loudly in the background. Right away, you had a preference for it to be turned down significantly so that you could not listen to it. And I thought that was so interesting and not surprising to me, because I know for myself, and I know for a lot of, high achievers, or and whether they're artists or otherwise, it's like you're always wanting to grow. You're always wanting to improve. So you're kind of built to notice maybe the things that could be different or better. But is that what's happening there when you hear it? You're noticing, oh, that's something I specifically would do different?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it also a general discomfort with hearing?
I'm pretty used to hearing myself.
Yeah.
Like I just told you, I record everything. I record every practice session.
Yeah.
But it's always just to get better, to improve.
Right.
So I'm used to hearing myself, so it's not that emotional reaction. It's more just, oh my God, why did I do that? Why did I do that? Yeah.
And that's what's interesting to me too, is not just like noticing the imperfections, but that critic that can come out too, right?
Yeah, right.
Where it's not just like, you know, loving and compassion, like, oh, I see why I made that choice. In the future, I'll do it better. It's like, you son of a bitch, what were you thinking?
Totally.
Is your inner critic harsh with you sometimes?
She's a bitch.
Isn't it interesting to be aware of the relationship with your inner critic?
I actually never even thought about inner critic until you just said that.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I think about it a lot.
I feel like it's me. I mean, yeah, so you think about that.
I do. I feel like artistically as well as going through life that we do have the nurturing version of ourselves and the critic, you know?
Right. I'm glad I have my critic.
It serves a purpose.
Oh, yeah.
But is perfection ever going to happen, or will it be an endless journey?
It's not a strive for perfection.
Yeah.
It's not a strive for that at all. It's just to be the best in those moments.
Right.
And technique is really, especially as a classical musician, which is all about technique, like I said earlier. Technique at the end of the day is the art form for me.
Right.
It's like being able to master something so that it seems simple. And yeah.
So if we had an experience in the future where you come in here and we play your latest hot track.
Right.
And we throw it on, and then we're just hanging out here. And then you put your feet up on the table, like you lean back super comfortably. You're like, crank it up. This is the good part. I'm going to know that I need to stage an intervention or something because you've gotten too comfortable and you're...
Yeah, you're gonna.
I don't know why for me it was all about the image of you putting your feet on the table. It just seems like kind of a cocky thing to do.
I think you should. I think you should definitely feel free to stage an intervention if that ever happens.
Okay, so it's official and it's documented official. Now.
Documented.
So you have no right, if I stage an intervention in such a scenario, to, I don't know, to rebuke my efforts to intervene, because we've decided right now that I have license to do so.
Okay.
Okay, and the world's heard it. And maybe your friends listening can sign off on
Hold
this.
Me accountable. Okay.
We were talking about your friends and what it means for you to come to Vancouver, you know, to do the opera festival, ostensibly. But also, you're here for long enough that you're not just flying in and flying out. You get to have some connections one-on-one with some dear friends.
Yep.
What does that mean to you to be able to come and connect with your roots here in BC?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, opera contacts are always the great for this, because we have 6 weeks of rehearsals, or five in this case 5 weeks of rehearsals, so we rehearse 6 days a week, and so I always have a day off and I can actually connect with friends, like we were saying, have like see friends one-on-one. And because obviously, and as most people know, the life of a musician, especially when you're traveling a lot at my stage, is pretty lonely. Spend a lot of time just me and my suitcase, and so being back where I'm from and being with people who just know me. They, like we were saying earlier, they hold me accountable for who I am. And that's a great reminder. That's a good reality check, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you just remember who you are.
Yeah, thank God for friendships
yes.
and family. It's
Absolutely.
It's so, so important.
You know,
the older I get, the more I realize that. Not that I ever lacked understanding of that in the past, but it just deepens for me.
Yeah.
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 Speaking about friendships.
Go on.
Which is quite interesting, is that this is the reason that I love Schubert the most. The guy whose music I was just singing and who's basically music I devote my entire life to, because this guy
and the man who invented the song.
The man who essentially invented the song.
If there was no Schubert, P.S. Are you telling me if there's no Schubert, there's no Beatles? I mean, if that's what
if that's what you're telling me,
then I'm in.
Yes.
I'm in.
Okay, so let me give you my like 5 minutes of Schubert or
please,
less.
Please, no. Go on.
So
this is your chance.
Okay,
this
so here's my floor. Schubert moment, or my moment with Schubert, or whatever we should call it. So Schubert died when he was 30 years old. And in his small, short 30 years, he wrote 600 songs. And he wrote a number of symphonies, all these string quartets, string quintets, et cetera, et cetera. But the song thing, I mean, 600 songs. There were times he was writing 2 songs a day. He would write a song, have breakfast, go for a walk, write another song. And these songs, each single song, are miniature masterpieces. But the reason I say that this guy is all about friendship is because his whole idea, especially with writing songs, was he would write songs to poems of his friends who weren't even necessarily deemed poets by society. And we're talking, Schubert was really a musical genius in his time in Vienna. Like, I mean, huge musical genius. And he would write songs set to a poem by a lawyer or by a doctor or...
to give their work its day in the sun.
To give their work, exactly, and to encourage people to be artistic at that time. And he also held a lot of what I'm trying to bring back with friends. I run a chamber music festival in Milan, and this is sort of our idea as well, is bringing back the idea of an art salon, a music salon. So what we have is friends all over, and we read poems and we experience music right there. I mean, the performer, and we talk about music. We break down these boundaries where I find that there's so many limitations with how we currently access classical music. And Schubert had it all right, and that wasn't like 300 years ago.
He created the template.
And of course, rightfully so, we put our stamp on it. But I think something can be lost when you're experiencing music and you're sitting in a seat and you're next to some people and you don't even really get to interact with the people you're sitting next to. And all of these limitations can sort of pull you away from the experience that you could be having.
The connection to the music can be richer if you're connected to the people around you.
Exactly. And if you're connected to the music and the story of the music itself, right? And that's what these songs are. I mean, so every time I hold a program, I talk through the poems and I explain, like, okay, so, well, for example, the song you just played.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this isn't boring everyone, but I think it's pretty cool.
I doubt that it is.
So the song I just played, the poem is set by, or it's set to a poem by this guy called Zeidel. And this guy, he was a lawyer by day. He didn't write that many poems in his life. He also, like, ended up in jail for a short stint because he was, like, crazy political man. And he was, his whole life, for, like, 12 years anyway of his life, I mean, back then that was a long time, completely obsessed with this woman, right? Like, to the point where she got a restraining order. He wrote this poem. And, of course, this was in German, what you just heard. But the poem is essentially about this, like, if I could be a bird, then I would be able to, like, follow her around wherever she would be, and my heart could sing to her and she would know how much I loved her, and all of these beautiful images. And basically what we're learning is that he was obsessed with her, and that, you know, so it was his expression of this. And
it's incredibly beautiful on
it's
the
incredibly
one hand
beautiful kind of creepy on
and
the
on the other
hand
kind of maybe creepy.
And I guess what I'm trying to say is the really beautiful thing about it is that so many people could have taken this poem and been like, I mean, the guy's a weirdo. Did you hear about him? But Schubert, being who he was, this huge-hearted person, took this poem and set, honestly, I mean, that for me is one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever in the whole world. And he set this music to this poem. And it shows a different light of someone.
Yes. And how beautiful is it? We talked about the merits of being able to go it alone artistically, but how beautiful is it when collaboration occurs,
yeah.
when it's the version of collaboration like you just described, when things can become greater than the sum of all parts. The intention that the thing that you create can be serviced by another thing. They can work together in a complementary way. And 300 years later,
yep.
we can be talking about it
yep.
after listening to you having performed that.
Right.
I mean, that's powerful. I mean,
it's
that's a lot more powerful or more enduring than any human life. You know, human
right.
lives come and go. But what we're talking about carries on. And I think about that a lot with music. And which is why it's important that you are recording the music. It's because it will out-survive you.
Right.
You know, and that's yep. a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Yep.
So I get it. The idea that he saw something inherently beautiful in the man who received the restraining order.
Crazy dude.
Who
yeah.
maybe was crazy, maybe was unhinged. We don't know. But underneath it all was this deep yearning to experience love with this other person.
And Schubert felt that.
And he felt that and trusted in that.
And wrote him a song. And now Im Frühling is one of everyone's favorite Schubert songs.
Wow.
And that's, I mean, that's beautiful. That also teaches you something about humanity, you know?
Yes. And we were having a conversation earlier when we were catching up about, I don't know, where do artistic ideas come from? What does it look like when we want to create art versus we need to? I was describing for you my experience last year of feeling very lost. And
right.
my experience this year of feeling found. And, you know, I'm okay with it because I'm out of the woods. Like
yeah.
you're saying, I'm not stuck in it anymore.
Yeah.
Because I recognize its value in, I don't know, in how it guides. It guides the artistic process. And it just makes, I don't know, it makes me feel like going through those things is essential in order to have something to say. You can want to be pretty, you can want to sound nice, you can want all those sort of details, you can want fame, you can want adulation, but if you're trying to connect with people regardless of all that, I feel like that's when the interesting artistic work begins to happen.
Absolutely. I also wonder if, like, I think the role, as I said earlier, I think to you outside, but I wonder if the role of an artist too is not just to create something beautiful, but to have something to say about humanity.
Yes.
And I don't think you can really have anything to say, correct me if I'm wrong, about humanity if you haven't gone through something really, really trying and testing at yourself.
Yeah.
Whether that's something you're born into, or whether it's something you go through as an adult or whatever. I mean, but I think it's crucial because then you can really have a better understanding and empathy of your fellow humans who are all suffering in some way or another.
Yes. And have you gone through enough of these trying experiences that
yeah.
you're ready to really get in there artistically, or do you feel like there's more suffering that needs to happen? There's always going to be more suffering.
I think there will always be suffering, but I don't think it has to be as painful as I made it when I was younger.
What was that like? What do you mean by that?
I guess I mean it's really fun for an artist to like cling on to the pain because it is very fruitful artistically.
Right.
But it's also not necessary. One of my favorite contemporary writers is Murakami, the Japanese writer.
Okay.
And he says, he has this great quote, and I always think about it. It's suffering is inevitable and pain is optional.
Hmm. Because you can just live there. You can identify with it and just spend your whole time swimming in pain.
Yeah.
Almost in a sort of self-flagellating way.
And that's just not very nice.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. We only have one life here.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as we know.
Yeah. How do you strike that balance as a sensitive, intuitive, artistic person that also does not seek to suffer, seek to swim in the pain? How do you attune to feeling things deeply without getting trapped in despair?
I think I'm still figuring out how to balance
yeah,
that.
It's an ongoing notion.
I think I'm just figuring that out.
Yeah, we're figuring it out here together on Now We're Talking.
Hey.
On CITR 101.9 FM. We're asking the big questions. We've still got another song that we're going to play. Rachel, I'm telling you, we're at the 47-minute
mark. That's crazy.
Let's make sure that we talk a little bit about the show that you're doing, because we would hate to run out of time and think, oh, we didn't do that. So let's do that.
Super.
Talk to me about the show you're doing, whatever you want to say. I know a little bit about the Vancouver Opera Festival.
Right.
It's inaugural year. My impression is this is a good sign. But tell me about the festival or the show or whatever you want. Tell me about it.
Okay. Well, the show that I'm involved with, I'm going to start with that, is The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart. And the libretto, so the play, is by Da Ponte, but it's set to a French play trilogy.
Speaking of collaboration.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And I'm playing the role of Susanna, which, some fun trivia, she is the longest role in female opera history.
Wow.
So I never leave stage. Essentially, it's in like an opera marathon. But the story itself is set all in one day, four acts, and it's a comedy. It's just, I can't even begin to explain it, but essentially it's a story about all the things that could go wrong on someone's wedding day. And, like, really, literally all the things.
Like a farce?
Yes, like a farce, okay. Exactly. And then, you know, lots of wonderful moral moments. And I'm not explaining it very well, except that our production is fantastic because we have, like, aside from an amazing creative team, like, world-class creative team, we also have this super hot fashion designer designing all of our costumes.
Nice.
So, and his name is Sid Nagam. He's from Toronto.
Okay.
He's like everywhere right now.
I think you had a picture of you trying one of the costumes on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and he's like just come from Paris Fashion Week. He's doing all our costumes. So like talk about making opera, kind of giving it a revamp, right?
Cool.
But the piece itself, it stands for itself. It's, how many characters in the show? 14 characters. And we just have a great time. It's in Italian.
You're on stage the whole time.
I'm on stage except for two numbers the whole time.
Yeah. And how often are you singing?
Oh, all the time.
Frequently?
Oh, yeah. I think it's like 3 straight hours of singing or something.
Oh, Lord. That's it's a muscle that is well exercised.
Yeah, yeah,
and you're like
exactly.
a
gymnast or something.
A gymnast or you do marathons or something. It's like to be able to, and not just singing, but singing like that. It's got to be like, you are an athlete in a sense, aren't you?
Yes, I do feel like that.
Yeah.
Especially as an opera singer.
You can't, you cannot pull that off without being in great shape.
No.
And really taking care of your physical self.
Yeah, I mean, you warm up every day. You practice every day. I've practiced every course, yeah.
Wow.
It's very much like being an athlete.
Yeah, if people want to see the show, I should mention what do they do?
Right, exactly. So if you want to see the show, we opened today. There are two casts. My cast, I open on the 6th of May and I run the 6th, the 10th, the 12th, 13th, and the 17th down at Vancouver Playhouse. And if you're under 40, there are tickets for under $40.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's a pretty sweet deal.
Playhouse is right next to QE.
The Playhouse is right next to the QE. And the cool thing is the Opera Festival, we also are doing operas in the Queen Elizabeth Theater.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then we have a big opera bar and an opera tent out front that runs all night. We have a DJ. It's super fun. So like
this is like a chance for you and all your opera brothers and sisters
to
come together.
We were down at the opera bar last night, closing the place down. We're gonna be, we're gonna be there for a cast party once I'm finished this here with you.
Yeah.
But no. So it's really exciting for there to be a sort of one basic hub for something that not a lot of people in Vancouver know about, but they're curious about.
Yes, I think so. That's my impression for me when I was taking a look at your website and looking at what you're up to while you're here in Vancouver. That's the impression that it gave me. It's like I'm peripherally aware of the opera that happens here in Victoria, mainly from hearing about your credits.
Right.
But it just seemed like, oh, this looks like an effort to, I don't know, I've just never thought of an opera festival. It seems like an opportunity for the layperson to get interested, get involved, and be exposed in a more wholesale way to the whole culture.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, also, you can go to more than one opera. So they're doing Otello,
right?
Which is an opera by Verdi, completely different from Mozart. I mean, Mozart is like, you're laughing basically the whole time. We had an open dress rehearsal for students on Thursday night.
Cool.
Which is always fun. And, these got kids. They're not kids. They're like 17 to 24. We're laughing hysterically. And I'm sitting there with a friend of mine and we're like, this is 18th century humor, and it's still funny.
It's translating it's in the world.
It's translating, and it's
social...
in fluent Italian. But we have translations, right?
Right. But that's heartening to hear. When you think about technology, and it would be easy to cynically say, everybody's just staring at their screens now.
Yep.
It's all about instant gratification.
Right.
You know, things like opera, like things of that stature, it feels like they're the first to go in a world of instant gratification.
Right.
But you're seeing how that's not necessarily the case.
Well, because there's something where we all want to feel that grand thing that you can feel in opera.
Yes.
Opera takes you on a journey. It takes you on a 3.5 hour journey that you didn't know you could go through because you didn't know human beings, A, could make that noise with their body. And I mean, but aside from that, it's just art on the highest level. I mean, it's music that you cannot imagine and words and text and a story to talk about the human experience.
And you talked about that curiosity earlier.
Yeah.
And how that's for you your guiding force, and maybe that's what it's like for people that are witnessing the performance and getting something out of it. Is they're along for that ride and indulging their own curiosity.
Exactly.
About the human experience.
Yeah. Well,
that sounded convincing, right?
That did. That was very succinct.
Let's play the other song.
Okay.
Which definitely, you know, the previous song I could have taken a shot. This one, definitely you need to pronounce it for me. Please. Yeah, it starts with an L.
Oh, it's Liebesbotschaft, which means love's message.
Love's message.
Love's message.
Here it is, love's message on Now We're Talking. We're just listening to this beautiful music performed both on the piano as well as vocally by Rachel Fenlon, my in-studio guest. We're almost out of time, but as we were listening to that, we were having a conversation about patience and, you know, just all the anything that you want to do in life, how it's so easy to forget about patience, to lose faith in just incremental gains. And we were talking about that, and you're saying for you, of course, you've had occasion to think about this as it pertains to you, I guess, gaining the skills that you have and mm-hmm. always working on them and always preparing mm-hmm. these things. You know all about yeah. devoting time to working through these things. What's that like for you to have patience?
I don't even think of it as patience anymore.
Mm.
I just think of it as determination to always practice.
Mm.
Basically, if I ever question anything, the answer is practice.
Right.
Ever.
What's the hardest thing about practice?
The wrong kind of practicing. If I'm practicing for to feel better about if I'm practicing emotionally, but if I'm practicing to improve on a certain thing, then yeah.
And what is it like to sit down to begin practicing? I ask that question because I think about for people when they go to a lot of people talk about wanting to go to the gym.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but the hardest part is getting to the gym.
No.
I think about writers. The hardest part is sitting down. Is that for you?
No.
Difficult?
I have to pull myself out of. If I had it my way, I would practice every night until about 4 or 5 a.m. You can ask any of my close friends. Yeah, but
it's
it gets
stopping.
To a point. I think I always get to a point where it's not useful anymore.
It can get obsessive.
I am completely.
To the point where you start to just go in circles.
Yeah, I mean, even before the opera, then I'm like, it's
how interesting. So your challenge isn't sitting down to do the
work.
No, recognizing when, okay, I've had a good session.
Yep.
I've made gains.
Yep.
It is now time to eat.
Exactly. And call it a day.
Yeah.
And take it on tomorrow. That would be my version of patience.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
For
interesting. Sure. Interesting. Which is an important skill also, because you don't want to, your energy and having balance, that's is like essential to you conducting yourself as an international woman of mystery, playing music around Europe. There's so many more questions. I'd love to talk to you for an hour about your experiences of being in Europe.
We didn't talk about this.
Is just scratching the surface. And I'm sure that there'll be another opportunity for you to come back to Vancouver and hopefully slip in a follow-up conversation.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think that we should do that. Folks, the time has run out, but you know what? Gareth is going to be coming up soon with More Than Human. At the top of the hour, which is quickly approaching. This is Jeff Bryant. You've been listening to Now We're Talking. And Rachel, thank you so much for coming. And it's been exactly what I hoped it would be. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.